Welcome to your OCR GCSE History Revision Podcast. I'm your study guide tutor, and today we are diving deep into one of the most fascinating topics on your specification, the Mughal Empire, from 1526 to 1707. Whether you're revising for the first time or doing a final check before your exam, this episode is going to give you everything you need to feel confident and pick up those top marks. The Mughal Empire is a world-depth study on the OCR History B, Schools History Project specification. That means examiners expect you to go beyond surface-level facts. They want you to analyze, explain causes, evaluate change and continuity, and use precise historical terminology. By the end of this podcast, you'll know exactly how to do that. So let's begin. Grab a pen because you'll want to jot down some key terms and dates as we go. Part 1, the core concepts. Let's start at the very beginning. The year is 1526. A Central Asian ruler named Babur, who claimed descent from both Timur and Genghis Khan, marched his forces into northern India. At the First Battle of Panipat in April 1526, Babur's army of around 12,000 soldiers defeated Ibrahim Lodi's much larger force of 100,000. How? Two key advantages: gunpowder artillery, which was new to the Indian subcontinent at this scale, and superior cavalry tactics. This single battle established the Mughal Empire. Remember, Babur means tiger in Persian, and he was just as fierce. But the empire nearly collapsed almost immediately. Babur's son Humayun ruled from 1530 but was driven into exile in 1540 by the Afghan ruler Sher Shah Suri. Humayun spent 15 years in exile at the Safavid Persian court. This is actually really important for your exam because his time in Persia had a lasting cultural impact. It introduced Persian artistic and administrative influences that would shape the empire for generations. Humayun finally regained the throne in 1555, but died just 1 year later in 1556 after falling down the stairs of his library. His son Akbar was only 13 years old when he became emperor. Now, Akbar is the emperor you absolutely must know inside out. He ruled from 1556 to 1605, the longest reign of any Mughal emperor, and he transformed the empire. Let's break down his three greatest achievements. First, the Mansabdari system. This is a term examiners love to test. The Mansabdari system was a ranked hierarchy of state officials and military commanders. Every official called a Mansabdar was assigned a numerical rank called a Zat, which determined their salary, their status, and the number of cavalry troops they were expected to maintain. The key point here, and this is where candidates often lose marks, is that Mansabdars did not own land. Instead, they were granted a Jagir, which was the right to collect revenue from a designated area of land. This was not a gift of land, it was a temporary assignment of revenue rights. The Mansabdar had to use that revenue to pay and equip their troops. This system gave Akbar direct control over his military and administrative apparatus because loyalty was to the emperor, not to local landowners. It also made tax collection far more efficient because Mansabdars had a personal financial incentive to ensure revenue was collected from their Jagir. Don't confuse Mansabdars with Zamindars. Zamindars were hereditary local landlords who had traditional rights over land and its revenue. They existed outside the Mansabdari system and often acted as intermediaries between the Mughal state and the peasant farmers. Examiners specifically credit candidates who can distinguish between these two groups clearly. Second, Akbar's religious policy, known as Salikul, meaning universal peace or peace with all. Now, here is a crucial examiner's point. Salikul is often described simply as religious tolerance, but that description only earns you level 2 marks. To reach level 3 and level 4, you need to explain it as a political strategy. Akbar abolished the jizya tax, which was a tax on non-Muslim subjects, in 1564. He married Rajput Hindu princesses, most famously Jodha Bai, and incorporated Rajput nobles into the highest ranks of the Mansabdari system. He established the Ibadat Khana, the house of worship, at Fatehpur Sikri in 1575, where scholars of all religions, including Hindus, Jains, Zoroastrians, and Christians, debated theology. The political purpose was clear. By including Hindu Rajput nobles in the imperial system, Akbar secured their military loyalty and administrative cooperation. The Rajputs were some of the finest warriors in India. Without their support, the empire could not have expanded as it did. Salikul was therefore as much about consolidating power as it was about genuine religious belief. Third, Akbar's administrative and cultural achievements. He built the magnificent planned city of Fatehpur Sikri near Agra between 1571 and 1585, which perfectly illustrates the fusion of Persian, Islamic, and Hindu architectural styles. The city was eventually abandoned, probably due to water supply problems, but it remains one of the most extraordinary examples of Mughal architecture. Akbar also standardized weights and measures, reformed the land revenue system under his finance minister Todarmal, and promoted Persian as the language of administration, creating a unified bureaucratic culture across the empire. After Akbar, his son Jahangir ruled from 1605 to 1627. Jahangir was a great patron of the arts, particularly miniature painting. His court produced some of the finest examples of Mughal miniature art. However, his reign was also marked by the growing influence of his wife Nur Jahan, who effectively controlled much of the imperial administration. This is worth noting as an example of how power could operate informally within the Mughal system. Then came Shah Jahan, who ruled from 1628 to 1658. His reign is often called the cultural zenith of the Mughal Empire. The most famous achievement is, of course, the Taj Mahal, built between 1632 and 1653 as a mausoleum for his beloved wife Mumtaz Mahal, who died in childbirth. The Taj Mahal is the supreme example of Mughal architecture, a fusion of Persian domes, Islamic geometric patterns, and Hindu decorative motifs, all executed in white marble inlaid with semi-precious stones. It cost an estimated 32 million rupees to build and employed around 20,000 workers. For your exam, remember that the Taj Mahal was not just a monument to love, it was a projection of imperial power, wealth, and divine authority. Shah Jahan also built the Red Fort in Delhi and the Jama Masjid Mosque and moved the imperial capital from Agra to Delhi. His reign saw the empire at its greatest territorial extent and cultural achievement, but also the beginning of financial strain from his enormous building projects. Shah Jahan's reign ended dramatically in 1658 when his son Aurangzeb seized power, imprisoned his father in Agra Fort, and declared himself emperor. Shah Jahan remained a prisoner until his death in 1666, reportedly able to see the Taj Mahal from his window. Aurangzeb ruled from 1658 to 1707, the longest reign of any Mughal emperor. His reign is central to understanding the seeds of decline. Unlike his predecessors, Aurangzeb pursued a policy of strict Islamic orthodoxy. In 1679, he reinstated the jizya tax on non-Muslim subjects, which had been abolished by Akbar over a century earlier. He destroyed Hindu temples, banned music and dancing at court, and reversed many of Akbar's policies of inclusion. The political consequences were severe. The Rajput nobles, who had been loyal partners of the Mughal state since Akbar's reign, rebelled. The Maratha Confederacy under Shivaji and later Sambhaji mounted sustained guerrilla resistance in the Deccan region. Aurangzeb spent the last 25 years of his reign fighting an exhausting and ultimately unsuccessful war in the Deccan, draining the imperial treasury and stretching military resources to breaking point. When he died in 1707, the empire was financially exhausted, militarily overextended, and politically fragmented. The seeds of decline had been sown. Part 2. Exam tips and common mistakes. Right. Now let's talk about how to turn your knowledge into marks. This is where many candidates go wrong, so listen carefully. Common mistake number 1. Confusing Akbar's and Aurangzeb's religious policies. Examiners see this constantly. Akbar pursued Sulh-e-Kul, universal peace, and abolished the jizya in 1564. Aurangzeb reinstated the jizya in 1679 and pursued Islamic orthodoxy. These are opposite policies separated by over a century. If you mix them up, you will lose marks immediately. A useful memory trick. Think of Akbar as a for all-inclusive and Aurangzeb as a for austere. Common mistake number 2. Describing the Mansabdari system vaguely. Candidates often write things like, Akbar gave land to his officials. This is wrong and will only earn level 1 marks. The correct answer is that Mansabdars were assigned a jiyoi, the right to collect revenue from land, not ownership of the land itself. The distinction matters because it meant loyalty remained with the emperor, not with local power bases. Common mistake number 3, treating 1526 to 1707 as a single, unchanging period. Examiners specifically reward candidates who identify the Golden Age under Akbar, Jahangir, and Shah Jahan, and contrast it with the seeds of decline under Aurangzeb. Use phrases like, there was significant change between the reign of Akbar and that of Aurangzeb, to signal your awareness of change and continuity. Common mistake number 4. Ignoring the structural weaknesses that existed even before Aurangzeb. In How Far questions about decline, stronger candidates will note that the Yagir system created structural problems. There were never enough Jaegers to satisfy all Mansabdars, leading to competition and resentment even in the empire's peak years. Aurangzeb's policies accelerated decline, but the structural weaknesses were already present. Now, let's talk about command words, because these tell you exactly what the examiner wants. Describe questions, usually worth 4 marks, want 2 developed features with supporting detail. Do not just list facts. Develop each point with specific knowledge. Explain why questions, usually worth 8 or 12 marks, want multiple explained causes linked together. Use the Peel structure. Point, evidence, explanation, link. For example, one reason Akbar's Mansabdari system was effective was that it tied official loyalty directly to the emperor. Evidence for this is that Mansabdars received Jaegers' revenue rights rather than land ownership, meaning their income depended entirely on imperial favor. This meant that officials had a strong incentive to remain loyal to the emperor because disloyalty would result in the loss of their Jaeger and income. This links to Akbar's broader strategy of centralizing power. How far do you agree questions? Usually worth 16 marks. Want a balanced argument with evidence on both sides and a clear, sustained judgment. Do not just describe both sides. Weigh them against each other and reach a conclusion. For source questions, always use the framework: content, provenance, usefulness, limitations. Content means what the source actually says or shows. Provenance means who created it, when, and why. Usefulness means what it tells us about the inquiry. Limitations means what it does not tell us or how its purpose might affect its reliability. Key terminology to use in your answers. Examiners award marks for precise use of historical vocabulary. Make sure you use these terms correctly. Mansabdari, Jaegir, Zat, Sawar, Jizya, Sulikul, Ibadat Khana, Zamindar, Diwan, Suba, Rajput, Maratha. Using these terms accurately signals to the examiner that you have genuine depth of knowledge, which is what AO1 is all about. Part 3, Quickfire Recall Quiz. Right, time to test yourself. I'll ask a question, give you a moment to think, then give you the answer. Ready? Question 1. In what year did Babur win the first battle of Panipat? Think. The answer is 1526. Question 2. What does Sulikul mean? Think. It means universal peace or peace with all. Question 3. What is the difference between a Mansabdar and a Zamindar? Think. A Mansabdar is a state-appointed official ranked within the imperial hierarchy, granted a Jaegir as temporary revenue rights. A Zamindar is a hereditary local landlord with traditional rights over land revenue outside the Mansabdari system. Question 4. In what year did Aurangzeb reinstate the jizya tax? Think. The answer is 1679. Question 5. Name 2 architectural achievements of Shah Jahan. Think. The Taj Mahal, completed in 1653, and the Red Fort in Delhi, completed in 1648. Question 6. What was the Ibadat Khana and who built it? Think. The Ibadat Khana was the house of worship, built by Akbar at Fatehpur Sikri in 1575, where scholars of all religions debated theology. How did you do? If you struggle with any of those, go back and review that section of your notes. Part 4, Summary and Sign-Off. Let's bring it all together. The Mughal Empire from 1526 to 1707 is a story of rise, golden age, and the seeds of decline. Babur founded the empire through military innovation at Panipat in 1526. Humayun's exile introduced Persian cultural influences. Akbar's reign from 1556 to 1605 was the transformative period. The Mansabdari system created an efficient, loyal administration. Sulikul built political alliances across religious communities, and Fatehpur Sikri embodied the cultural fusion of the empire. Shah Jahan's reign from 1628 to 1658 was the cultural zenith, with the Taj Mahal as its crowning achievement. Aurangzeb's reign from 1658 to 1707 saw the reversal of Akbar's inclusive policies, the reinstatement of the Jizya, Rajput, and Maratha rebellions, and military overextension in the Deccan, leaving the empire weakened at his death in 1707. For your exam, remember 3 things. First, use precise terminology. Jaegir, Mansabdari, Sulikul, Jizya. Second, explain causes and consequences. Do not just describe events. Third, show awareness of change and continuity across the period, distinguishing the golden age from the seeds of decline. You've got this. Good luck in your exam, and remember, the more specific your knowledge, the more marks you earn. Until next time, keep revising.